Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Responsum Day for the 6th of Iyar. Today we're going to see Responsum Shut Binyan Tzion of Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, number 101, dated the 6th of Iyar of Tuf Resh Chet of 1848, which was pretty much exactly 100 years before the founding of the State of Israel. Of course, the State of Israel was declared on the 5th of Iyar, but as it happens, the 6th of Iyar in this particular year of 5777 is when the Jews of the State of Israel are celebrating Yom HaAtzmaut for various reasons, and so I wanted to make sure we noted that and realized that, 100 years before that, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger certainly had no idea of how Jewish history was going to play out, nor was it relevant to the Tshuva at all. I just thought I'd note it. I also want to make sure that we remember Rabbi Jack Abramowitz and David Hochhauser at the OU and OU.org, who host these shiurim, and thank them for their help and assistance in doing so. Question that Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was dealing with was the question of whether it's permissible to give orla or kilei hakerem. So orla is the fruit from the first 3 years of the growth of a tree. So when you have a fruit tree, the first 3 years you're not allowed to do anything with it. You're supposed to burn it. And then the fourth year you're supposed to be taken, it's called netzer revive, supposed to be taken to Yerushalayim and eaten there. And so that halacha of orla applies, I had to just look it up to be sure that I was right, but it applies in Israel, but it also applies outside of Israel, as halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, it's where the Shulchan Aruch paskin and the discussion in the Gemara, but as the Shulchan Aruch rules on it, it's a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. But that means, though, that when the Binyan Tzion is talking about orla from fruit trees, that's an actual practical halacha that could apply to the Jews of Germany to whom he was addressing. It also applies to kilei hakerem. Kilei hakerem should not occur, really, but if it does, you have kilei hakerem is when you plant a grape seed, and in the same place where you plant the grape for the vine, you plant, let's say, something else as well, wheat. I think it has to be two other things, but wheat and an apple, whatever it is, you plant things together and they become kilayim. So they're prohibited, you can't do anything with them. They're asurim b'hana'ah, they are prohibited to get any benefit from. So now the question that was raised for him is, can you feed them to animals that are not yours, for which you have no responsibility? So the animals of other people or the birds, right? Of hefker, you're not getting any benefit from. In other words, well, let's say I have wheat that, however it became so, is kilei hakerem. I have, breadcrumbs that I found out are from kilei hakerem, or I have, apples that are kilei hakerem, that are orla, and I'm not allowed to use them. Can I put them in a place, can I throw them in front of, where the dogs go, and let dogs or animals of the, animals of the forest, can I throw them out there and feed them to there? Not just throw them out, feed them to there. The question is, therefore, in other words, is when it's prohibited to get benefit, does that mean that nobody can get benefit or that the owner can't get benefit? So the Binyan Tzion answers that we say in Orach Chaim, in Taf Mem Chet, that on Pesach, you cannot feed bread, chametz. If somebody finds themselves in ownership of chametz on Pesach, which they shouldn't have been, but let's say they find themselves in ownership of chametz, they want to get rid of it, you can't feed it to other animals, even if they're not your animals, even if you have no responsibility for them, you can't feed them to hefker animals. Why not? So it seems like when we say that something is prohibited, you can't get benefit, that includes even where there's no benefit accruing to the person in question. And we're going to run there, right? That the animal gets benefit. So that sounds like it would mean that a prohibition of hana'ah means that nobody can get benefit. That would then apply to orla as well. But the Binyan Tzion says the words of the Magen Avraham are not clear. He doesn't understand the Magen Avraham's position, because so what that the behemoth gets benefit? Since he's not getting benefit, why is that a violation of anything? So he says, Binyan Tzion says, he thinks that this halacha has its source, it's a discussion in various Gemaras. You look at the Yerushalmi, which the Tur happens to quote, where they learn this halacha about chametz, that you can't give chametz to even an animal that doesn't belong to you, an animal of hefker, from the fact that the verse in the Torah says, lo ye'achel chametz. Lo ye'achel chametz sounds like it should not be eaten. So that's the drush there is. Therefore, it's a loshon nifal, lo ye'achel al yado, that he can't cause it to be eaten even if he gets no benefit from it. But you could theoretically then say, there's prohibitions of hana'ah, where the problem is the owner getting benefit or the person involved getting benefit. And then there's other things. Chametz is one of those other things. And that would be true. The Gemara actually has an opinion of Rabbi Avuha, the Rambam Paskins like, which holds that anytime the Torah says not to eat something, lo yochal, which sounds like it's just about eating, Rabbi Avuha held that when the Torah says that, it actually means you can't get any benefit. But even according to the other perspective, the perspective of Chizkiah, that Lo Yochal does not imply a prohibition of benefit. Here in Chametz, it's said Lo Ye'achel, that shows you Lo Yehebo Yeter Achila, that you can't have any eating of it done, and therefore, since you can't have any eating of it done, it doesn't matter whether you're getting a personal benefit or not. But with Orlin Kilei Kerem, it doesn't say Lo Ye'achel. So therefore, you'd think that you could feed it to the animals which will give you no benefit whatsoever. Except that here there's another issue as well. And that other issue as well comes up in a Mishnah in Timura on Daf Lamed Gimel, where it says, "Ve'elu hein hanisrafim." These are the things that need to be burned. The Ha'orla, the Kila Kerem is in that list. Orla and Kila Kerem are on that list. And then it says, in that Mishnah it says explicitly, "Ve'chol hanisrafim lo yikavru." And if it's slated for burning, it means you can't bury it. So it sounds like, we're going to have to discuss this, and that's what the Binyan is going to discuss, but it sounds like it means that there's an obligation of sreifa. There's an obligation of burning, and where there's an obligation of burning, you can't get rid of them in any other way. The problem with that reading is that the Bartanura to that Mishnah wrote that the reason you have to burn them is that if you bury them, maybe somebody, either knowingly or unknowingly, but will come across the item that you buried before it gets completely decayed in the ground, and will benefit from it. And therefore, the Bartanura sounds like the burning isn't actually a mitzvah of its own, a requirement of its own. It's just to make sure that nobody takes possession or advantage of it. So, you know, let's say I have a huge amount of orla. So let's say it's apples. I've got a bushel of apples. I don't even know what a bushel looks like, but let's say I've got a big basket of apples. Can't do anything with it. It's orla. I don't have any fire. I don't have any convenient place to burn. I say, you know what? I'll just bury it in the ground. So if there was an absolute obligation to burn it, then I'm obviously not done what I was supposed to do because I had an obligation to burn it. That's one possibility, and that is what we're going to see in the second. Rabbi Akiva Eger seems to have understood. Rabbi Akiva Eger is bothered by this Bartanura. So we'll get to the Bartanura now in a second, but let's remember the language of the Mishnah is there. These are what have to be burnt. Orlan Kila Kerem is included. And if you burn them, if you are required to burn them, you can't bury them. So why can't I bury this bushel of apples? So the Bartanura says, I can't bury the bushel of apples because apples take a long time in the ground before they'll decay, let's say. I'll bury the apples 6 feet under. Somebody might come along, either knowing what I did or not knowing what I did, but they'll come along, they'll dig up the ground, they'll find, you know, these apples still there. They say, oh, apples. So maybe that's why. If that's why, it sounds like it's totally instrumental. It's only for the purpose of preventing other people from slipping up and benefiting from these items from which we're not allowed to have a benefit. But if there were a way, and we'll get to a way later in this tshuva, in this responsum, if there were a way to get rid of the orla material without any worry that anybody else would take any advantage of it, then the Bartanura seems to imply that that should be okay. Rabbi Akiva Eger says, I don't understand. How could that be? There's a much simpler reason. The simple reason that you can't bury them, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, is because you have to burn them. So I don't need to reach for a reason why I have to burn them. So one option theoretically could have been the Bartanura didn't conceive of this idea that there's an absolute mitzvah to burn. And the Bartanura was so sure that whenever you see a mitzvah to burn, what it means is a mitzvah to get rid of such that nobody gets hana'ah, and that's why he said it. But the Binyan Tzion is going to go a little bit further than that and point out that it might be there's two different situations. So he says, Avalaniyatati lokashi. He thinks the Bartanura makes perfect sense. Because the Bartanura, in fact, he says, it's following the opinion of Rashi. There's a Rashi in the Masechet Shabbat and Daf Chaf Hei. When it comes to the obligation to burn Truma Shinit Meit. So Truma is, you have a harvest, right? So at least Dagan Tirosh V'Yitzar, at least grain, wine, and oil. Let's use those. Those are obviously the right ones. You have to give Truma from them. So you take, you know, you crush your olives into oil. You get the oil out of it. Then you're supposed to give Truma, but it, and you set aside the Truma, you have to give it to a Kohen, and then it gets Tame in some way, right? It becomes ritually impure in any of the ways it can become ritually impure. That Truma now is unusable. Truma Tumeah is not allowed to be used, it has to be burnt. So Rashi in Daf Shabbat, on Shabbat, Daf Chafei, on page 25 in Shabbat, says the reason you have to burn Truma Tumeah is Mishum Takala. It's because of the worry that somebody might use it unless we burn it. That's what Rashi says it. So in other words, it's not that there's an obligation to burn Truma Tmeah. The truth is, if you wanted to leave, as far as the Torah was concerned, if you wanted to leave Truma Tmeah just lying around as a permanent reminder to be more careful with your Truma so you don't end up having to get rid of it and not use it, that would have been theoretically okay, except that we're worried that something will go wrong. Somebody will end up using it, wittingly or unwittingly, meaning unwittingly would be, you know, there's a lot of truma in the house, there's a lot of oil in the house. It's in my, all that truma oil is in its truma cabinet. There's a canister there and it's got an X on it, but I don't know what the X means. So I pull it out and I use it. And it turns out, boom, I've used truma tmei, I've used truma that became ritually impure. Or, I guess, theoretically, you can imagine also the other way around. Somebody knows it's truma tmei, but they run out of all the other oil and they've got a lot of guests coming over and in a moment of weakness they use it, whatever it is. Point is that Rashi makes it seem like the reason we burn Truma Tmeah is just to make sure it's gotten rid of and that nobody comes to use it improperly. V'chatzua Tosfot, and Tosfot there say that according to that reasoning, it shouldn't have to be burning only. Right? Because if the reason is to make sure that nobody use it improperly, then any mechanism that I have to get rid of it that ensures that nobody uses it should be good enough. And so too, says Tosfot, you have a Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Mem Vav, which says that if you have challah shenit meit, if you have, so challah, let's remember, is grain is different than most other things, because grain is something that you take truma from it and give it to the Kohen in its wheat form, in its grain form, and then after you turn it into flour and break it into bread, or at least into a dough, and then maybe into bread, either way, you take some of that off as well. It's not because you haven't yet taken truma from it. It's a separate truma-like donation that the Torah required when it came to bread. That's challah. So again, that same halacha applies. If you have challah that became tameh, then you can't use it. That's why today, when women who are, all of us outside of Israel for sure are tameh, but even inside Israel, I think we're all ritually impure. We haven't had the chance to get ritually impure, and God willing, one day soon we will. So you bake bread. If you bake enough bread that you need to take challah from it, so you take the challah, but then we burn it. The reason we burn it is because it's true. It's at best challah tmeah. It's tameh because you didn't have the opportunity to bake it in a way and to prepare it in a way that there wasn't tumah there. So that's why we burn it. So the Tosfos says, there's Gemara Pesachim that says, you can give challah shenit meit like kalbo. You can give it to your dog. So all that sounds like, at least when it comes to truma and challah, the requirement to burn it is utilitarian, is for a purpose, right? It's only because we're not sure, we want to make sure that nothing goes wrong with it. And then the problem is, though, in Sof Temura, in the end of Temura, in the Mishnah, Truma Tmeya is listed in Habahadeh HaNisrafim. And it says there, HaNisrafim Lo Yikavru. So the Tosfos writes that, and they didn't understand how Rashi could have said this about Truma Tmeya when it's in our list. Now, why is that going to be important and useful for us? I'm asking you just to give you a second to think about it. Why is that going to be useful for us? It's going to be useful for us because in that same list, we had the topic of our question. What was the topic of our question? The topic of our question was oil and kilei hakeren, and they're in that same list in Temura. So Tosfos is bringing up our exact question. Rashi, we're discussing another item on our list, seems to make it a question of how do we avoid problems with it, and that's why it has to be burnt, and that's why it can't be buried. So the Bar Tanura now is only really just elaborating what Rashi said. The reasoning is you want to make sure nothing goes wrong with it. If you bury it, Rashi, and or certainly the Bar Tanura, and he seems to be understanding that Rashi meant that, was saying that burying it is not good enough because somebody might dig it up accidentally or not, and they might therefore use it, and therefore you'd have a problem. But it all still puts the burning into a question of how do I make sure nothing goes wrong with it and not an actual mitzvah problem, that there's a mitzvah issue that you have to burn it. So therefore, says the Binyan Tzion, I think Orla and Kilei Kerem is the same thing. Because the only time, he says, that you have an actual mitzvah of burning, not the only time, one of the few times, they have an actual mitzvah of burning is in Kodshim that something went wrong. If you have sacrifices that something went wrong with them, so it says, there, you can't eat it and you can't get benefit from it. And then it writes in the Torah, Ba'esht Sareif, you have to burn it by fire. So the Binyan Tzion is saying that burning by fire is an actual end and goal of its own. It's a mitzvah of its own. Havatzreifa mitzvah. But when it came to oil and kilei hakeren, the Torah never said burn it. The Torah doesn't say it. The Torah says pen to kadesh, lest it become a problem and you'll have to burn it. Sorry, the Torah actually says pen tikdash. The Dvarim Chav Bet Tet. Gemara says pen tikdash, and the Gemara. I'm sorry, the Torah says that, and the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Nun Vav Amid Bet says pen to kadesh, lest it be put to the fire. So that's about Kilei HaKeren. It's about Kilei HaSadeh. Pentigdash HaMelea HaZera Shet Yisrael Tvat HaKarim. Lest it become Mehukdash, meaning not in a good way, lest it become the kind of thing you have to burn. So it doesn't say it's gonna, it doesn't say you're required to burn it, it's gonna get burnt. So once I can say it's gonna get burnt, I can understand that the pasuk doesn't mean, this is the binyan tzion, I'm saying it's not me, the pasuk doesn't mean that you're gonna have to burn it, that you're gonna have to burn it because there's an obligation to burn it. It means you're gonna have to burn it because it's gonna be prohibited to get hana'ah from it, benefit from it, and therefore you're gonna have to burn it to make sure that nobody uses it inappropriately. And he thinks there's support for this claim by the fact that we have another Mishnah in Temura, or the Mishnah in Temura says, Et shedarkan li srov yisrov, that darkan shedarkan li kaver yikaver. Those that are generally burnt, you burn, and those that are generally buried, you bury. So if the problem, if the issue was you had to burn it as an independent fact and obligation, then there's no reason why we talk about what this thing's way of being gotten rid of was. And Rashi there says, it's talking about Orla and Kilei HaKerem, and Rashi says, Ochlin yisarfu, food you'd have to burn, umashkin yikavru, and you can bury liquids. And so too, there's a Tosfos in Shabbos that seems to agree, or the Tosfos in Shabbos that we spoke about before, seems to agree with this idea, this split within Orla. So that split within Orla makes no sense if burning is an obligation of its own. Why don't we just say, you have to burn the liquids as well? And by the way, we have that. You could say, well, we don't burn liquids. It's not true. When it comes to nisachim, so nisachim are usually wine that's libated as part of offering a korban. So when, if that wine was left over and not libated, left over beyond its proper time, Gemara in Sukkah Daf Mem Tet speaks about the fact that you have to burn it. So there you have to burn. So too, with wine that you pour onto certain korbanot, and as they're being burned, also you talk about sreifa. You pour it on there, you put it on there, and they have to be burned. So there is such a thing as burning by liquids. It's not like there's no halacha issue. You can never burn by liquid. So therefore, it says the binyan tzion, it must be there's no obligation to burn for the reason that we said. So then why does the Mishnah explicitly say you can't bury them? That's Rashi, because you're worried that somebody will eventually find them. So why is the liquid different? That's why. Because liquid, once you pour it into the ground, now it has to be, he doesn't say this explicitly, but he must mean, and he must understand Rashi to mean, that the liquid's not going to pool. That once you bury it, you're going to pour it into the ground and then cover it over with dirt. It's not going to pool or anything such that you'd find it later. But, you know, there are people do find water and liquids underground sometimes. So that could not be allowed to happen. But it is true that it's more clear that when you pour liquid into the ground and it absorbs into the ground, that it's impossible to get it anymore because it's bored, it's already been absorbed into it. And therefore, for those for liquids, burial would be an option that would be equally as good as the burning. That's true of Orla and Kilei HaKerem, says the Binyan Tzion. But when it comes to Chametz, right, to there, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who said you have to, who learned out the need to burn it from Notar, right, there's a machloket in the Mishnah about how we get rid of Chametz. There is, the opinion of Rabbanan is, you can get rid of it lots of ways. You can crumble it up and throw it to the wind. You can toss it into a sea where nobody's ever going to find it. You can burn it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda held, you have to burn it. So the Ravak Vedlinger says, Rabbi Yehuda learned that. He derives it from a comparison between Chametz and Notar. So if you're going to compare it to Notar, Notar are leftover sacrifices. There, the Binyan Tzion had agreed that the burning is itself the goal, itself the requirement, and therefore, that would be true of Chametz as well for Rabbi Yehuda. And he says, and if you look at the language of the Mishnah in Temura, right, so to be able to make these inferences, you'd have to know the Mishnah in Temura first. The Elohen and Israfin, it says, these are what's burnt. Chametz va Pesach yisareif. Chametz on Passover, on Pesach, leavened stuff on Pesach, you have to burn. The Trumo Tzmei of Orla V'Kila Kerem, Etch Adarkan Lisareif. It goes on there. It goes from Truma, and then Truma that got became ritually impure, and Orla V'Kila Kerem, those things which you burn, which we've already said is solid foods, and those things that you bury, you bury. So why did it add that word, Yisareif, after the words Chametz Pesach, right? If it says to you, this is the list of items to burn, Chametz Pesach is one on the list, then why do you have to put in let it be burned again right afterwards, then you're going out to Truma Tmeya, to ritually impure Truma, which also has to be burned. Says the Binyan Tzion, that's why, because Chametz Pesach is actually different than the other things on the list. It's coming to tell you that with Chametz Pesach, you have to burn it literally you have to burn it. That's the only choice you have. With Olen, Kedah Kerem, it's only that which is its way to be done or not done. And therefore, he says also, this would answer a question of the Chasam Sofers that he had seen. He had seen it, I think, in manuscript, meaning he'd gotten a letter from the Chasam Sofer, he'd seen it in some piece of writing, and now the editors of this Binyan Tzion say, and it's also been printed by now, in the response of the Chasam Sofer, but it's reminded that Binyan Tzion actually knew the Chasam Sofer, they corresponded with each other, they were contemporaries, and to some extent, colleagues, and to some extent, perhaps even equals. Chasam Sofer had said, that according to the Bar Tanur that we've been talking about, who says that the point of burning is because you're worried that if you bury them, somebody will find them. So the issue is only people finding them. The Chasam Sofer had said, well, then when you burn them, you only have to burn them until they're made into ashes. Right? As long as it's already been made, it's been removed from the world in its original form of whatever it was, of truma, let's say, or of orla, or of kilakarim, of the fruit off the tree in the first 3 years, right? As long as it's been burned up, then the mitzvah has been performed, and therefore you could be able to use it. And he says that should be true, he thinks, by chametz, if you plant chametz in the ground, and it's the kind of a planting where the original seed is completely destroyed, meaning there are things that you plant or that you grow, and the original thing never goes away, it just becomes part of the new thing. But there are a lot of things where it's not what happens. You put it in the ground and it's gone, and then this whole new thing comes up. So that's called zaro chala. The original seed goes away completely. It's supposed to, let's say, I'm not a great planter, but I think with, let's say, avocado pits, and you can email me and let me know where I'm making mistakes, grothst@gmail.com, with an avocado pit, I think you like put it in water and it opens and then a new thing comes out, and then you eventually plant it in the ground, but that original pit sort of stays or becomes part of the new thing, or something along those lines. That would be Ein Zaro Kala. But if you take, I think, when you take, let's say, certainly if you take an apple seed and you plant it in the ground and you get a tree out of it, that original seed is nowhere. So that's a Zaro Kala. So the Chatam Sofer has argued that if it's a Zaro Kala, if its seed gets completely destroyed by the planting process, that should be good enough too as a form of burning it, because we're only worried that it should be found by somebody, whatever. That's what he suggests. So the Binyan Tzion says, I don't understand. That's not right, because Rashi in the Bar Tanura didn't say, first of all, they didn't say it about chametz, right? That's the first thing, right? The Binyan Tzion had argued that the Mishnah Tzimur has a distinction between chametz and everything else, because it puts yeast aref after the word chametz to be sure of it. So when the Chasam Sofer argues that about chametz, and as a proposition, he's, in the Binyan Tzion's reading, he's not taking Rashi and the Bar Tanura the way they were meant to be taken, because he's saying that it applies to chametz as well, that is, once it's removed from the world in a way that nobody else will make the mistake or come to eat or benefit from the chametz, it should be okay, including planting it. So the Binyan says, no, first of all, chametz is different. It's only truma, orla, and kilei hakerem. Chametz has an actual mitzvah to be burned, and therefore that gets rid of that problem. And to prove his point, to show how he doesn't understand how the Chasam Sofer could have made that argument, he thinks it's a mistake, he says there's all discussion in the Gemara in Pesachim about Rabbi Akiva and how much you do or don't have to get rid of chametz, but he says, I understand getting rid of chametz, there's no greater getting rid of chametz than feeding it to your dog. So how could Rava have understood from a Gemara in Pesachim that Rabbi Akiva held that there's no bior other than sreifa? The Gemara there derives from the fact that Rabbi Akiva says if you find chametz, I think, on Pesach, you got to hold it until after Yom Tov and then get rid of it. So if there's other ways of being mevayer it, there's other ways of getting rid of it, then why should that be, right? So if I'm allowed to, let's say, you know, throw it to the wind, so why shouldn't I do that on Pesach, right? As long as I'm inflicted with this scenario, I'm going to feed it to the birds and I'm going to throw it to the birds, throw it to the wind, I'm going to crush it up, throw it to the sea. If all those things are permitted on the holiday, then why does Rabbi Akiva say you can't do it? So Rava proves from the other, Rabbi Akiva agrees with the position of Rabbi Yehuda that you can only burn it, says the Binyan Tzion, but according to the logic that the Chasam Sofer just suggested, doesn't make sense, because if the Chasam Sofer said the only real problem is getting rid of it, make sure you've gotten rid of it, then feed it to your dog. Right, so that doesn't prove anything, right? Meaning, the question still stands, even if Rabbi Akiva held you have to burn it. Because that's what Chasam Sofer talking about. Chasam Sofer saying, even in the realm of you have to burn it, he thinks once you really fully, effectively get rid of it, you're also okay. Then you'd see, you know, I have to say that I think Chasam Sofer would have had answers to these questions, but it's not our job right here. Our job is only to see the Binyan Tzion. So therefore, he says, therefore, it must be that that what he said is correct, that chametz is different than the others in the list, that chametz, in fact, there's an actual obligation, for those who hold that way, there's an actual obligation to burn it, having nothing to do with just being sure to get rid of it. But on other items in the list, it's a question of making sure you get rid of it in a way that nobody has a problem with it. So just like Rashi said it explicitly about truma tumea, that if it's liquid, you can pour it into the ground, because then you can be sure nobody else will take it. So too, he thinks, and that you can give it to a dog if you're going to make sure that if the dog's going to eat it, you can be sure of it. So too, he thinks when it comes to oil and kilei kerem, you should be allowed to do it. Just that with truma, which is mutar b'hana'ah, you're allowed to get hana'ah from, you just can't eat it, and therefore you have to get rid of it. So then you can give it to your own dog. But oil and kilei kerem, which are prohibited b'hana'ah, you're allowed to get benefit from it, so that has to be hefker. He says, no, that from Rashi and Pesachim, it's clear that he holds that coming to Pesach, you can give to dogs of Hefker, according to Rabbanan, right? We said there are two opinions. One opinion, you have to burn it. So we all tend to burn it because we like to follow both opinions if we can. But according to Rabbanan, it should be that you get rid of it other ways. That should include feeding it to animals that don't belong to you, because you're not getting any benefit from it, and you're getting rid of it from the world, because they hold hashpatato b'chol davar, and not like the Yerushalmi that we saw, and that's what Pnei Yeshua says, and etc. So that's a discussion you can have, but when it comes to oil and kilei kerem, he thinks it's very clear that that should be true. So that is the Binyan Tzion on the question of feeding oil and kilei kerem to animals that don't belong to you, that you have no financial stake in, and he holds that we're allowed to do so for the reason that we have reviewed. Yesterday I went a little lot over time, so today I'm going to go a little bit under time, and I hope that it all balances out, and that you recognize that I respect your time, and I appreciate your coming to join me for these discussions in these shiurim. And I close with thanks to Rabbi Jacob Roberts, David Hochhauser, to the OU, and with best wishes for a happy Yom HaAtzmaut, and foreseeing in the years to come even greater salvations and even greater miracles than the Jews of the State of Israel and those who watch and love the State of Israel have already seen until now. Have a great day.